crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal. We're coming to you today, of course, from Jerusalem, Israel, where there is a lot of noise and a lot of music playing because the Jews here are celebrating the holiday of Purim for the last couple of days. And I think it continues, at least in Jerusalem, tonight and tomorrow. Well, the holiday of Purim commemorates the biblical tale of Mordecai and Esther and the way that they, with God's help and backing, of course, thwarted the plan by the Persian viceroy Haman to slaughter the Jewish people. This was an attempt, a deliberate attempt to destroy not just the Jews that were living, that had returned back to the land of Israel a few or 100 years earlier, but all over the empire, the Persian Empire. And what happened eventually, as you're probably familiar with the Esther story, is that Esther, who was a Jewess, ended up marrying the king, who was King Xerxes, history's King Xerxes. And from that place inside the realm, as the queen, she was able to go before him and request that he issues another decree whereby the Jewish people would be allowed to fight, to stand up and fight against the people that would try and kill them. Of course, it was a Persian rule that once a decree went out from the governing authority, from the emperor, that decree could not be withdrawn, and that's why a second decree had to be released. Well, it might seem like a joyous celebration, and it is in many ways, but Purim this year comes at a time when the Iranian leadership once again is seeking to destroy the Jews. Now, this isn't a shock to anybody. This has been reported widely ever since the Iranian takeover, or the Islamic takeover of the Iranian nation back in 1979. This is one of their stated purposes, to destroy the state of Israel. And, of course, the Jews would go right along with that. Now, there was a meeting earlier this week with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow, and they were talking about what is taking place in Syria right now, the Syrian civil war, and Iran's place in that. Of course, Putin is on the same side of with Iran right now inside Syria, and Netanyahu was talking about the dangers that the Jewish people face, that Israel faces, if Iran stays inside Syria after the Syrian civil war is concluded. And what Netanyahu did with his talk with Mr. Putin was bring up this history, this 3,000, almost 3,000 year history, 2,500 year history of what happened with Esther, Mordecai, Xerxes, Haman in Persia. And he said, at least in some comments after their meeting, he said that there was in Persia back then an attempt to destroy the Jewish people that did not succeed. And then he said in this press conference, it was in Hebrew, but I'll just quote it for you. He said, "Today there is an attempt by Persia's heir, Iran, to destroy the state of the Jews. They say this clearly as possible and inscribe it on their ballistic missiles." And what's interesting is that Putin wouldn't have anything to do with those comments. He said that they happened in the 5th century BCE. Those events happened 2,500 years ago. We live in a different world. Let's talk about now. Let's talk about that world that we live in now. That's what Putin is saying. And really, it just blew Mr. Netanyahu's argument, or his beginning of his speech before him, out of the water and said, that doesn't apply. We don't live in biblical times right now. That might have happened 2,500 years ago with a different Iranian empire, but times are different. But how different are they? How different are they? We do live in a world where the Bible is taking center stage, and prophecies that are inside the Bible are taking center stage. And again, they have everything to do with Iran. They have everything to do with Putin. They have everything to do with a coming united Europe as well. And while the story of Esther might seem out of date to some, it is extremely applicable right now. Now, regardless of whether or not Putin believes this application of the history of Esther can be made at this time, just look around. Just look around and look at the nation of Israel. Look at the Jewish people. They are in a desperate situation. And again, it does revolve around the threat that they face mainly from this time, at this time, from Iran. Now, I don't want to paint Iran having a negative history towards the Jews wholesale. That obviously isn't the case. If you look back in history, the history in the Bible, and even the history before 1979, there was some Iranian support for the Jews, especially if you look into the biblical period. Whether it's King Cyrus or Xerxes and Esther's time, Darius, Artaxerxes, all of them supported the Jews inside the territory of Yehud, or the land of Israel, as it is today. But really now, since the Islamic takeover of Tehran, of Iran, back in 1979, we see vehement hatred, a religious jihad that's being waged by the Iranian regime, targeting specifically the Jews. But of course, as we know from history, the Jews might be the first target, but they're definitely not the last of the Iranian Empire. Now, 2 years ago, about this same time, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was speaking before the United States Congress. You'll probably remember this speech. It was a very important speech. It came at a time just before the Iranian nuclear deal was about to be agreed upon by the United States administration with Iran, that they said would likely, hopefully, moderate Iran, bring it into the community of nations. It would stop their nuclear program, and they would receive financial benefits from that. And the 2 years since, we have seen, and it's been reported on quite a lot in Watch Jerusalem, just how much the Iranian regime has changed, or hasn't changed, but has only increased its hatred and its acts, its violent acts towards the state of Israel through supporting its terrorist proxies, but then also what Iran's doing across the Middle East. It hasn't been contained by the nuclear deal. Anyhow, you remember 2 years ago, this was a highly controversial speech that he was about to give. And when he gave it before the United States Congress, Mr. Netanyahu started off speaking about the story of Esther and the Iranian nation. At this time of Purim, I think it's worthwhile to go back and listen to that in full. I'll leave a link to that complete speech in full if you would like to listen to that. But we're just going to listen to a 7-minute portion right now, and it'll introduce the topic I want to talk about for the rest of today's show. So here again is Mr. Netanyahu, March 3rd, 2015, speaking before the United States Congress.
My friends, I've come here today because as Prime Minister of Israel, I feel a profound obligation to speak to you about an issue that could well threaten the survival of my country and the future of my people: Iran's quest for nuclear weapons. We're an ancient people. In our nearly 4,000 years of history, many have tried repeatedly to destroy the Jewish people. Tomorrow night, on the Jewish holiday of Purim, we'll read the book of Esther. We'll read of a powerful Persian viceroy named Haman, who plotted to destroy the Jewish people some 2,500 years ago. But a courageous Jewish woman, Queen Esther, exposed the plot and gained for the Jewish people the right to defend themselves against their enemies. The plot was foiled. Our people were saved. Today, the Jewish people face another attempt by yet another Persian potentate to destroy us. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, spews the oldest hatred of anti-Semitism with the newest technology. He tweets that Israel must be annihilated. He tweets. You know, in Iran, there isn't exactly free internet. But he tweets in English that Israel must be destroyed. For those who believe that Iran threatens a Jewish state, but not the Jewish people, listen to Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, Iran's chief terrorist proxy. He said, "If all the Jews gather in Israel, it will save us the trouble of chasing them down around the world." But Iran's regime is not merely a Jewish problem, any more than the Nazi regime was merely a Jewish problem. The 6 million Jews murdered by the Nazis were but a fraction of the 60 million people killed in World War II. So too, Iran's regime poses a grave threat not only to Israel, but also to the peace of the entire world. To understand just how dangerous Iran would be with nuclear weapons, we must fully understand the nature of the regime. The people of Iran are very talented people. They're heirs to one of the world's great civilizations. But in 1979, they were hijacked by religious zealots who imposed on them immediately a dark and brutal dictatorship. That year, the zealots drafted a constitution, a new one for Iran. It directed the Revolutionary Guards not only to protect Iran's borders, but also to fulfill the ideological mission of jihad. The regime's founder, Ayatollah Khomeini, exhorted his followers to export the revolution throughout the world. I'm standing here in Washington, D.C., and the difference is so stark. America's founding document promises life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Iran's founding document pledges death, tyranny, and the pursuit of jihad. And as states are collapsing across the Middle East, Iran is charging into the void to do just that. Iran's goons in Gaza, its lackeys in Lebanon, its revolutionary guards on the Golan Heights are clutching Israel with three tentacles of terror. Backed by Iran, Assad is slaughtering Syrians. Backed by Iran, Shiite militias are rampaging through Iraq. Backed by Iran, Houthis are seizing control of Yemen, threatening the strategic straits at the mouth of the Red Sea. Along with the Straits of Hormuz, that would give Iran a second choke point on the world's oil supply. Just last week, near Hormuz, Iran carried out a military exercise blowing up a mock U.S. aircraft carrier. That's just last week, while they're having nuclear talks with the United States. But unfortunately, for the last 36 years, Iran's attacks against the United States have been anything but mock, and the targets have been all too real. Iran took dozens of Americans hostage in Tehran, murdered hundreds of American soldiers, Marines, in Beirut, and was responsible for killing and maiming thousands of American servicemen and women in Iraq and Afghanistan. Beyond the Middle East, Iran attacks America and its allies through its global terror network. It blew up the Jewish Community Center and the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. It helped al-Qaeda bomb U.S. embassies in Africa. It even attempted to assassinate the Saudi ambassador right here in Washington, D.C. In the Middle East, Iran now dominates four Arab capitals: Baghdad, Damascus, Beirut, and Sana'a. And if Iran's aggression is left unchecked, more will surely follow. So at a time when many hope that Iran will join the community of nations, Iran is busy gobbling up the nations. We must all stand together to stop Iran's march of conquest, subjugation, and terror.
We must all stand together to stop Iran's march of conquest, subjugation, and terror. That's what he said 2 years ago at Purim, Mr. Netanyahu, speaking before the United States Congress. How much has the world done this in the past 2 years? How much have they stood together to stop Iran's conquest? Well, you would have to say, to this point, they haven't at all. They haven't done anything. Now, in the past 2 years, what we've seen, especially in the fight against the Islamic State, is Iran gobble up, just as he was saying, gobble up Iraq. It's gobbled up much of Iraq. It's sent more of its proxies inside Syria. It's infiltrated parts of Middle Africa, even. It's destabilized Bahrain, and it's increased its support to the Houthis in Yemen. Iran hasn't been stopped, and it is continuing to on its conquest. And it's this last nation that I want to focus on for the rest of today's program, what Iran is doing in Yemen. Because this past Friday, just as Purim was about to get underway, Iran acted in a way that shouldn't just worry Israel, though, but the whole Western world. Now, a piece has just gone up on Watch Jerusalem. It's entitled, Iran Ups Ante with Naval Mines in Critical Sea Choke Point. Now, this is a game changer. We have been watching what Iran's been doing inside Yemen in the past 2 years through its proxy, the Houthis. And yet, just this past weekend, they started, or at least probably a couple of weeks ago, they started laying naval mines across this 20-mile choke point at the entrance to the Red Sea, that if you continue up through there, you'll get to the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean. And what happened on Friday? Well, we had the first of the victims of these naval mines. This is what the article says. A Yemeni Coast Guard vessel exploded on Friday, hitting a naval mine planted in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait by the Iranian-backed Houthi militia. Yemeni military sources revealed to Al Arabiya that the explosion occurred as the vessel was undertaking a surveillance tour in the region. Two Coast Guard officers were killed. 8 others are currently being treated. Now, these deaths caused by a mine, a naval mine. Why do you use mines to try and stop vessels, in this case, from traveling through this territory, this waterway? Well, these deaths just come 1 week after the United States Office of Naval Intelligence warned of exactly this, that the Iranian-backed Houthi militia operating in western Yemen had deployed naval mines in the strait. They said that they just warned of the danger to commercial ships going through here. And yet it wasn't a commercial ship that was the first one to hit these. It was an actual Coast Guard vessel. Now, this placing of naval mines inside the Bab el-Mandeb Strait is just the very latest in a host of signs that Iran is implementing a strategy to control shipping through this critical sea lane. This is extremely, extremely important. And it has everything to do with Purim. It has everything to do with the conquests of the Iranian nation, and it has everything to do with the future stability of the world. Now, at the end of February, Iran was conducting its annual naval exercise. This takes place normally in the Indian Ocean from around the Straits of Hormuz, but this year, for the first time, was another area that was added. This specific area in question, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. It wasn't available to them for their military exercises previously. This year it is. This year they're going in. They have done many naval exercises through those straits. 2 weeks later, a Yemeni vessel hits a naval mine in those straits. Now, nobody has said this yet, and it is pure speculation that it could have been the Iranian military, the Iranian Navy, that dropped some of these mines. Or was it the Houthis? Now, that's beside the point. The connection to the Houthis by Iran, or Iran's connection to the Houthis, has been well documented. And I will leave a link from Memory, a research organization here in Israel, that will fill you in on documents upon document of research that shows how much Iran is backing these Houthis. But what are they doing there? Is this just a random attack? Like, you hear about attacks that happen all over the Middle East where an Iranian proxy attacks another proxy or another nation? Or does this reveal a strategy that Iran is now implementing? Well, I say that it is a sign that Iran is implementing a strategy that will have ramifications far more, or far larger, than just this territory around Yemen. This is what Jacob Shapiro wrote for Geopolitical Futures about the inclusion of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait in this year's exercises, Iranian exercises. He says, quote, that it offers a window into Iran's strategy. It offers a window into Iran's strategy, the fact that this place was now included in the military exercises. During those exercises, we had them test fire the Dahlevia anti-ship missile for the first time. This is a laser-guided missile created by Iranian technicians, and it's designed specifically to fire from land and target passing ships. And such a weapon, of course, would put shipping traffic through these narrow sea passages, such as the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Persian Gulf, at risk. This is what Jacob Shapiro wrote for Geopolitical Futures. He says, Iran's recent naval exercises indicate that Iran could be preparing to take advantage of a distracted United States should conflict in the South China Sea or elsewhere take place. If the United States does not have the resources necessary to prevent Iran from projecting power in the region, Iran wants to be sufficiently prepared to take advantage of the situation. Therefore, we can conclude that Iran considers the Bab el-Mandeb important enough to increase its capabilities to project force in that region. Certainly that's the case. Iran does consider the Bab el-Mandeb Strait important for them and their strategic future. Then he writes, Iran is adding the Bab el-Mandeb to the theaters in which the country feels it must be capable of operating. There are no precise details on what Iran has deployed, but in this case, the specifics of the deployment are less important than observing that Iran now considers the Bab el-Mandeb part of its immediate strategic environment. So that was from just this 2 weeks ago from Geopolitical Futures, that the Bab el-Mandeb, right where the Iranians took over, or at least mobilize their militia, the Houthis, to take over the capital of Yemen, that is just on the eastern side of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. They mobilized them a couple of years ago to take over the capital. And at the time, we talked about how this was a sign that Iran was implementing their strategy to control waterways. These waterways that are extremely important for world trade and world stability. Now, we have observed ever since that, in January 2015, time after time after time, or occurrence after occurrence, where Iran has just upped the ante time and again through a number of different attacks on vessels coming through these waterways. I forget the number we're up to now, but it's probably close to about 20 in the past 2 years. There was just a couple of weeks ago, or earlier this year, in late January, I think it was, there was a Houthi suicide boat attack on a Saudi frigate. You can see this on video, where this vessel charges towards, and the video is taken from another Houthi vessel that's a bit of a distance off. It charges a Saudi frigate and blows up. Now, that was just the newest tactic. Before then, you'll remember that they actually fired missiles upon an American ship, the USS Mason, with anti-ship missiles from the land that was traveling just north of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. They did that in early October, October 9th, and then October 12th. They did it again. And that just happened to be the 16th anniversary of the attack on the USS Cole, which... what happened then? Well, that's when many Americans were killed, when a boat loaded with explosives ran into its side, similar to the attack on the Saudi vessel. Then, in November 2016, just after those couple of attacks, the Iranian Armed Forces Chief of Staff, Major General Mohammad Hossein Bakheri, he said, quote, "One day, we may need naval bases on the coast of Yemen and Syria." We may need naval bases there. So they obviously believe this is part of their strategic environment right now, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and this latest event this weekend, they're laying landmines, not landmines, sorry, naval mines, planting naval mines across this 18-mile strait. Now, is this important? Is this important? Now, in order to reach the Mediterranean Sea from the Indian Ocean, a lot of seafaring trade, including 3.8 million barrels of oil per day, passes through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, this southern gate of the Red Sea. Now, controlling this is extremely important, as important as controlling the Suez Canal, because they are both part of the same thoroughfare. Really just consider the global ramifications of this. 10% of global seaborne oil passes through this gate. Roughly 20,000 ships pass through the Suez Canal and Bab el-Mandeb Strait each year. That's about 15% of global maritime trade travels through the Red Sea. And here we have Iran backing a militia that's attacking with missiles, with boats laden with explosives, and now who is laying naval mines, across that passageway. Is this serious? Well, this is what James Holmes wrote for Foreign Policy earlier this year, or late 2016. He said this: "If a coastal foe can menace shipping transiting this narrow seaway, it would disrupt the shortest, most convenient sea route connecting Europe with South and East Asia. Doing so would carry significant economic and military repercussions." Yes, it would. Then he continues, "Houthi antics could drive insurance rates sky high for merchant shipping, prompting shippers to bypass the danger zone. And in a sense, then, the Houthis could conscript insurance firm Lloyd's of London as an ally, magnifying their influence while distorting patterns of trade and military operations." So it's saying that insurance is going to go up. It's no longer going to be feasible for these ships to pass through there. Well, is it? Is it feasible for a ship to pass through there when you may hit a naval mine? Again, there is a lot of traffic through this territory. And Iran has moved over the past 2 years to show to the world that they have the power to target any vessel that travels through there. Now, added to that, just this past week, they have completed a number of short-range ballistic missiles tests. And I'm just going to quote from a forthcoming piece on Watch Jerusalem by Callum Wood. And it has everything to do with being able to control these straits as well. He writes, "Iran launched two Fateh-10, a 110 short-range ballistic missiles during the past week. The launches were made from an Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps base at Bandar Ejazk in southeastern Iran. The first missile was launched into the Gulf of Oman last Saturday, but missed its apparent target. Iran successfully tested a second rocket the following day. Iran has now conducted a total of 14 ballistic missile tests since it signed the nuclear compromise on January 16, 2016. That's how many ballistic missile tests they have conducted since the nuclear deal was implemented that was meant to moderate Iran. But no, they're testing their weaponry. But what for? He continues, "The launch is a test of an older missile model." Fox News quoted unnamed officials saying that the Fateh 110 has not been tested in 2 years. The last time this model was used, the Fateh, Persian for conqueror, starred in a propaganda film by blowing up a simulated United States aircraft carrier. That's how they used this weapon 2 years ago. According to Fox News sources, this week's Fateh 110 is new and improved with, quote, "active seeker technology that it allows it to better detect ships at sea." Ships at sea. This is what Callum Wood continues to write, the Fatah 110 has other roles beyond targeting American carriers and other ships. In November 2014, Fatah 110s were shipped to Hezbollah for use in the future war of Israel. The missiles are road mobile and can be used against land-based targets, but the improvements to the weapon, as well as the way in which it was tested, show that the Iranians' primary purpose for the missile, what? It is a weapon to be used to conquer the Persian Gulf and the Red Sea. That is why they improved this technology, this missile, specifically so that it can target ships traveling through the Persian Gulf, traveling through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. So then they have their own missiles, they have the Houthis, they have the naval mines. This is quite a lot, quite an arsenal they're creating, quite a ways or a means in which to stop international shipping, or at least put in jeopardy international shipping through the Red Sea and through the Persian Gulf. Now, there are many people out there that say Iran would never do this. This would be crazy. Well, why are they investing so much of their energies into developing these technologies and into mobilizing their proxies to not worry just about territorial gains on land? I mean, you would think that the Houthis would be worried about pushing eastward into central and eastern Yemen, taking over that territory, maybe pushing northward across the border into Saudi Arabia, if they were just interested in taking over territory. Why are they picking a fight in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait? Why are they diverting their precious resources not to a land-based fight, but to a naval warfare, to an attack on ships, to laying naval mines? It's because this is a serious strategy of Iran. Iran wants to dominate the Red Sea region. Now, would it really close the Red Sea to international shipping? If it did, which nations would be willing to counteract it? Would the United States come across and forcefully remove what Iran's doing, forcefully remove the Iranian proxy from there? Now, that's a good question. And as before, Geopolitical Futures writes that Iran is preparing for the time that the United States is focused elsewhere, and cannot come to the Bab el-Mandeb Strait to stop an Iranian blockade. Now, they think that that's a possibility, Geopolitical Futures. They're just a strategic geopolitical source, analysis source. So this is something that's possible. So who else would come and stop the Iranian blockade that they look to be trying to set up at the Bab el-Mandeb Strait? Now, for that answer, you need to request and read the book by Watch Jerusalem editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry entitled The King of the South. Now, that book does concern much more than that. It really does look at Iran's rise in the Middle East. Since 1993, Gerald Flurry has called Iran the King of the South, which is a reference to a prophecy in the book of Daniel chapter 11, which talks about how this king of the south in the latter time, as it mentions there in verse 40, is going to push at a different power called in the Bible the king of the north. Now, you can identify who this king of the south is. In that book, The King of the South, it lays out a very good case that the king of the south is radical Islam led by Iran. And inside that book, it also reveals its strategy. And Gerald Flurry, back in 2011, he said, Iran's strategy is to control the Red Sea. That was years before the Houthis took over the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, well, Western Yemen, so they could take over the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. And now what do we read on the news consistently? What did we see just this past weekend? Iran is wanting to control, and they're moving to control the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, so they can control shipping in the Red Sea. And it has everything to do with Daniel 11 and verse 40. Now, this prophecy in Daniel 11 verse 40, it was given just about 100 years before Esther. just about 100 years before Esther came on the scene. And yet, just as Esther is applicable to today, this prophecy is extremely applicable today. It was never fulfilled anciently. The first part of Daniel chapter 11, even if, as we've talked about on this program, does cover ancient history between the king of the south, the king of the north, anciently, the Ptolemaic and the Seleucid kingdoms, anciently, and that prophecy that was written by Daniel has come true in ancient history, then by the time you get to verse 40, it concerns the time we are living in right now. Right now. And it says, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind." There will be a response from this king of the north. But notice that there is a push from the king of the south. There is a push. Now that this is the precursor to a coming nuclear World War III. And it all starts with a push from the king of the south. One power, the king of the south, is going to push at the king of the north, another power. Now, who is the king of the north? The king of the north, and you can prove this for yourself if you read much of Watch Jerusalem, you'll see that that king of the north represents a coming united Europe led by none other than Germany. None other than Germany. And this king of the south, well, that's radical Islam led by Iran. Now, if we just consider history, that isn't far-fetched if you consider the Crusades through the Middle Ages, where we had Islam fighting against Christianity, and the Bible indicates that it is going to happen again. And while religion will be a big part of it, prophecy indicates that there will also be geopolitical considerations, and it starts with a geopolitical consideration, this push from one king to another. Now, based on Bible prophecy and the strategy of Iran, we have to ask, what would be a push? What would be a geopolitical push against the king of the north? Well, would closing the Straits of Bab el-Mandab be that? Considering how much of Europe's goods and trade and oil comes through that strait, would the closing of the Persian Gulf be that as well? No, I think that would definitely be a push. Of course it would be. If we just look back to the history, the Israeli history of what happened at the start of the 1967 Six-Day War, what was the reason that Israel, or one of the few reasons why Israel led a preemptive strike against Egypt? It was because they closed the Straits of Tiran, the access point that Israel had to the Red Sea. They're hemming us in. We have to have a preemptive strike against them. So if we just bring it to modern times and we see an Iranian-backed militia that has the weaponry of a modern army, that has the missiles, the anti-ship missiles, that has the naval mines, if they are moving to block the Strait of Bab el-Mandab, would that motivate Europe into a preemptive strike on Iran? Well, geopolitically, prophetically, that makes sense. You need to watch what Iran is doing in the Bab el-Mandab Strait. It has global consequences. We need to watch what Iran is doing here. This isn't just about Iran and the Jews. Even as Mr. Netanyahu spoke about that earlier in that speech before the United States Congress back in 2015, he said this: "But Iran's regime is not merely a Jewish problem, any more than the Nazi regime was merely a Jewish problem. The 6 million Jews murdered by the Nazis were but a fraction of the 60 million people killed in World War II. So too, Iran's regime poses a grave threat, not only to Israel, but also to the peace of the entire world." And that's true. While Israel is Iran's target number one, they pose a greater threat to the peace of the entire world. And no doubt, there are some in Europe already that are noticing this. certainly if they're watching what's happening at the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Now, if you want to read more about this, please again request Gerald Fleury's book. It's entitled The King of the South. It's free. You can request it at Watch Jerusalem. Just click on our literature tab. You can download the PDF or you can request a hard copy and we'll send one to you wherever you are in the world. It'll come right to your mailbox. Thanks for listening to Watch Jerusalem today. I'm Brent Nachtigall. We're coming to you, of course, from Jerusalem. You can send some feedback if you like to our show by emailing letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.